This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Eco-friendly living should be easy, but oftentimes it doesn't quite feel like that. Brightly believes that small, planet-focused lifestyle swaps can help us all fight back against climate change every single day. Part of being a conscious consumer means that when it's time to buy a new item, considering a product that is eco-friendlier than the alternative can actually make a difference. Brightly Shop focuses on easy, effective eco products designed to help you reduce waste and make smart, planet-focused decisions around your house every day, whether it's stopping food waste with our Veggie Saver bag or eliminating single-use plastic wrap with our bowl covers. Pick from dozens of our favorite eco swaps that have been thoroughly vetted and tested by our team, including yours truly, who has just done so much testing. So head to brightly.eco/shop and use code GOODTOGETHER to receive 20% off your first order with us. The alternative leather market is exploding right now. There's leather made from mushrooms, pineapples, recycled bottles, and even apples. And actually, we're carrying an apple leather bag right now in the Brightly shop, so go check that out. But anyway, this week we're resharing a past episode where we do a deep dive into the world of eco leathers. Are they worth the hype? Come listen. Okay, welcome to Good Together, listeners. I am super excited to welcome Inder Bedi, the founder of Matt and Nat. This is one of the first mainstream vegan handbag lines, which launched in 1995. After 2 decades with Matt and Nat, he decided it was time for a new adventure, and he launched 457 Anew, a slow fashion line focused on the next level sustainability. They craft handbags, accessories, and more out of plants, ocean waste, and landfill-based fabrics. So today we're going to chat about what actually makes up your handbags in terms of materials. And I'm really excited to have Inder on Good Together. So welcome.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me here today. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. So to get us started, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about how you originally got into the vegan fashion space and sort of how your vision has evolved over time.
Sure. I've been vegetarian since I was 18 years old, which has been several decades now. I won't say how many, but it's been a while. And when I got into university, I was doing a bachelor's degree in commerce with the aim of going to law school. My last semester for a course that I didn't want to take, entrepreneurship, but I had to take it to complete the credits, we actually had to go to banks and try to get funding for a make-believe business. So being a frustrated vegetarian, this is going back to the mid-90s, that couldn't find apparel, shoes that were vegan, I thought, why not base it on a vegan fashion brand? And that's pretty much the idea, where the idea for Matt and Nat came from. After I graduated, well, I got like a 77 on that paper. The teacher, professor thought it was interesting, but didn't really understand what a vegan was at that time and why people would want to buy vegan fashion. So
you were definitely ahead of your time back then, I feel like. I definitely ahead of the times. I love it.
I just thought it would have been an interesting business venture in the sense that nobody had really been doing this. Well, actually, that's not fair. The gentleman that inspired me to kind of get into the space or even it was a gentleman, his name Robin. It was this brand out of the UK called Vegetarian Shoes. He was doing like Doc Martens and different types of interesting footwear, but with vegan uppers. And after I graduated, I said, I'm going to put my plans to go to law school on hold. I went on a trip to India, and on the way there, I actually stopped in the UK to meet him, and just he was so helpful in terms of just telling me like about the industry and how he got started. And I told him that I was thinking of doing bags, and he was like, "Yeah, that could be cool." So, long story short, ran Matinat for 2 decades, founded it in 1995, brought on a business partner 7 years later, who still runs Matinat today. And I ran that for 2 decades. It was a super interesting ride. I mean, we saw all kinds of different growth happening, particularly in the early 2000s, when people started becoming, I think, more aware of veganism, not just for diet, but also for fashion. And then at the end of the ride, the same voice that told me to start this in 95 told me that it was time to kind of move on. And just go on to something else. So, that was my journey at Matinat. And towards, that I basically took time off for just reflection, personal growth. Wasn't even sure if I would come back into the industry or not. I had a young family at the time. Well, they're still young, and just wanted to get back to spending time with them. I found myself being on a plane every 10 days to 2 weeks. We're doing trade shows all over North America and Europe. And something inside me just told me that it was time to kind of step back from everything that was going on.
That's amazing. I mean, I think everybody, when they go through the founding of companies, we do all have, you know, as a founder myself, I've had the same thing happen, where we definitely have the voice that speaks to you, right? So it sounds like it was kind of time for you to evolve and move on. And so your new brand, I feel like, is very focused on similar goals around sustainability that Matt and Nat was created around. But really, what inspired you, I guess, to start a new brand and go into that realm?
I just felt that if I got back into the industry, I really wanted to do something that, at least to me, felt next level. Not a lot of people know this, but when I first started Matinat, we actually used to do all our production locally in Canada, in Montreal. And the materials were all being imported from Italy and Spain, and it was a higher price point. So first of all, I felt that I really wanted to get back to local production, just being able to touch and feel product again and being close to the whole process. So that was something that I just felt that over the last X number of years, there's been a resurgence in getting back into local production and just old school craftsmanship. So that was one of the things. And then I also felt that if I got back into this, I went back to the whole recycling symbol, which, you know, the three arrows actually symbolize reduce, reuse, recycle. And just doing a bit of research and getting back into that whole movement from the late 60s, 70s, and thinking that if I get into this, I really want to focus on reducing and reusing, and maybe less so on recycling. So how can we find materials that can be, well, first of all, how can we create a product that kind of lends itself to reducing the amount of goods that are being produced on a regular basis? So really tying back into slow fashion and less so into fast fashion. And producing locally, producing a quality product and using quality resources, to me, really meant that these goods would not see a landfill. They would be out there for a very long time. So that was the first requirement. And then reusing, I mean, 457NU was pretty much born in scrapyards. I literally went into scrapyards and started cutting out seatbelts out of cars. We got them from planes as well. And just seeing how that could be applied to fashion, but how can we do it in a way? I mean, people have been making bags out of seatbelts for decades, and, you know, my hat goes off to them. Like, there's some really interesting products out there. I just want to do it in a way that felt maybe a little bit more elevated. Like, how can we,
you know what I mean? Like, you know, fashion with like a capital F.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I still wanted the fashion component to be there. Yes. And I think it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong, for that, you know, fashion is such a wide space that people have been doing amazing things with in terms of reusing scrap materials for, like I said, decades. But I really want to do it in a way that kind of tie back into it being very much at home in a boutique or on a sleek website. So
I love that. I mean, I think one of the things that is fascinating to me about your journey here with this new brand is the focus on reuse, because to your point that you made earlier, people often think that recycling is just this silver bullet in terms of a solution. Like, we throw things into our recycling bin that most likely aren't even going to be recycled. And, you know, the various governments at play across the world have various limitations on what they can actually recycle. And so the more that we can think about reusing what's already out there and turning it into new products, I think is fascinating and something that is not necessarily as popular right now, I guess, as the creation of new materials. So I think that's really interesting. I love it.
But yeah, and recycling is so energy intensive. And going back to your point, Laura, something like, I mean, generally speaking, over 85% of goods that we do feel are being recycled are actually not, just because the facilities don't exist. And you know, this whole recycling symbol was developed by, his name's Gary Anderson. It was this contest back in 1970 that was put out across various colleges in the States. And you know, his order was really reduce, reuse, recycle in terms of the environment, reduction being the primary focus, reusing being secondary, and then recycling was kind of like last resort. And again, there are some great recycled materials out there, components, and we're even using some of them because technology is not advanced enough, you know, so that everything is created out of landfill yet. But that is the goal. And part of our slogan, you know, our slogan is one day everything new will come from something old, is that I want to get to a point where everything we're using is coming from landfill or ocean waste. That's really the goal of 4, 5, 7 and you, is to focus on materials and products that already exist out there versus creating new ones. So how can we not just minimize our effect on the environment or be completely neutral, but actually create pieces where we're cleaning up oceans and landfills? So when I thought about getting back to the industry from that aspect, that's what got me excited. Like, and to me, that is, I hope where more and more brands are going to go over the next number of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just this focus on, you know, finding things that already exist, fashioning new things out of them. I think that's fascinating. And, you know, thinking about even before this new brand and your thoughts on Matt and Nat, I know that, you know, vegan leather, you know, as one example of a material, you know, that you've used in the past. And I believe you use it in your current brand as well. Is that correct? Do you still use vegan leather in your new brand?
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I really started out with, well, seatbelts was the first step. And then we were able to get our hands on a bunch of aircraft leather that was thrown out by Air Canada redoes their seats every now and then.
Okay.
Every X number of years when they refurbish their aircraft. So we got a bunch of that and then made a line of backpacks and duffel bags. It's a limited, you know, number of units, because once those seats are gone, they're gone. And being a vegetarian myself, I wasn't sure if that's something I want to do. But again, looking at it from a sustainable point of view, like, this is stuff that literally, if we don't use it, it just ends up in the garbage or landfill somewhere. So that was an interesting kind of collection that we did. And then went back and forth with Econil was a fabric that we discovered that's based out of Italy, that the CEO, his mandate, again, is to really empty oceans of fishnets, different types of waste. They also use carpet fiber waste in the production of their yarn. They advertise that there's no new resources that go into regenerating this infinitely. So we went back and forth with them. They have a whole approval process. That's a yarn that we use in our production as well. And then as we saw, people were still demanding a leather look, especially for the bags that we do, because we also do outerwear. We discovered Deserto, which is a plant-based leather grown from cactus leaves in Mexico. So that to me was very interesting in terms of how that world has evolved from using, you know, vegan leathers back in the day at Matt and Nat, and now seeing that there's this rush to make them out of everything from cactus to mushrooms to grapes, which is super interesting. It's not perfect yet. It is devoid of PVC and toxic chemicals and phthalates, which is good, but there are still certain binding agents that they need to use, even though it is plant-based. But it is very interesting how there's so much funding for that direction, and how a lot of mainstream brands are kind of jumping on it from, well, mainstream, whether it's Lululemon or Stella McCartney. So I think as more and more, again, brands just push industry to develop these products, I'm hoping that one day we'll be able to get leathers that are close to 100% plant-based. That would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you a little bit about what goes into, you know, traditional vegan leather. And I know that there are, you know, are some controversies around it because of the PVC, you know, the plastics and the kind of the binding materials and things like that. I mean, like we talk about on this podcast all the time, there's always trade-off conversations that are necessary. I mean, you know, the leather industry, like the true leather industry, is, you know, very detrimental to the environment. You know, there's people have an idea of where they think their leather comes from. It's usually not the case. It's usually made under conditions that are not, you know, eco-friendly or humane. And so most of the time when people hear this, they think, okay, I'm going to go out and get something that's not made of leather. But, you know, other concerns come up, such as what's actually in the material, durability, would love to talk to you a little bit about that, looks, et cetera. So I'm glad that you kind of talked about some other materials that exist. And of course, we also understand that these are not going to be perfect, right? Like there's very few perfect sustainability related solutions, if you will.
Yeah, it's very, absolutely. And my friends that are hardcore have not bought a fashion item in many years.
And mm-hmm, that's right.
That's their version of perfect. And I totally respect that. I mean, they would rather go to thrift stores or, you know, even take items that have been sitting in their closet or their mother's closet or their older sibling's closet and kind of like give them a new life, which I think is amazing.
Yes.
In terms of mainstream customers, I think there's always going to be that desire for new, for fresh. I also feel that we could do it in a way that ties more into slow fashion, less into fast fashion, by making sure that items always have a second life, by ensuring that they don't end up in landfill, and of course, by using resources that are sustainably made, which again is not perfect, just given the nature of industry, but as there's more demand from consumers and as more mainstream brands jump on this, I think it just puts that much more pressure on industry to come out with materials that are more sustainable and just take into account the type of impact they're having on the environment.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to ask you, because it sounds like something, it's something you've already run into in the case of making the bags or making accessories from the former airline seat leather. My question is more around capsule collections and limited time edition products that might, you know, only be around for as long as the material is around. So what are your thoughts on consumer appetite for this? Do you feel like people are excited by limited time only products? Do you feel like, are they disappointed if they see somebody wearing that and then they, you know, come to your website and they're unable to purchase it? Like, what do you think about the consumer psychology around this type of purchasing pattern?
I think consumers get super excited about it. I know even the aircraft collection that we've done, it's been one of the most popular collections we have. They do get excited. And there's also stories behind this. And that's the other thing, when you're reusing materials, there's actual stories like these.
Yes.
Seatbelts have seen, you know, thousands, if not tens or hundreds and thousands of miles. These seats have been sat on by God knows how many people and have probably had coffee dropped on them and who knows what else.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because they look, I mean, they've just worn really well. They're still in great condition, obviously, or otherwise we wouldn't go through the effort of, you know, putting them together and shipping them off to our customers and guaranteeing them as well, which is really important to me that everything has to be guaranteed. And I think with streetwear, we saw a lot of this, you know, where things get dropped and they're in limited edition and they're gone within hours, sometimes minutes, and once they're gone, they're gone, and it's on to the next. Like we, I guess it's in terms of consumerism, we've gotten into this. Not everybody that buys fashion, but a lot of people have gotten into this whole journey of being excited that something is going to be available for a limited amount of time and limited quantity, and once it's done, it's done. I just feel that there should be a way to do that and keep it to not have it to be so mass. Like when things are like done like that, I don't think it should be tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of units. It should be at the most hundreds. There has to be a real value to saying that it's limited, and it has to be more
absolutely
from a authentic point of view and not from a marketing point of view. And again, you know, there's a lot of brilliant things that go on when it comes to marketing, and businesses are around to make money. That's obvious, but I think there's a balance that we can find in giving consumers real value in terms of the product that's being provided, and not just doing it for the sake of hype. I mean, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes total sense. And I think it goes along with general shifts in consumer consumption patterns that we both are already seeing and ones that are needing to come into existence in order for us to be more eco-friendly shoppers, right? The insistence on returns, right? Like I used to work at Amazon in the fashion area before I founded Brightly, and was very exposed to the amount of returns that happened constantly. And I think that's one cycle that I think it's almost like recycling, you know, people kind of throw it back in the box and get their store credit. But, you know, I think people don't often realize that it is pretty difficult for retailers to be able to resell returned items. And, you know, that generates waste. When we talk about durability, like we talked about earlier, we need to be focused on buying products that are going to last. And I think this, you know, new world of limited edition products that might be from materials that are only available in small quantities because they've been reused, it just goes along with that pattern. So that's just really interesting to hear. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the process of making your products. So you get these really interesting, innovative materials that are made out of, you know, things like cactus leaves or fishing nets. So how do you actually take that product, so take that material and turn it into the, sort of the beautiful polished bag that you end up with? I'm curious to know.
The first step is R&D and testing. And that's another thing that ties into slow fashion. And you mentioned it earlier, Laura, in terms of durability. And that's a big one. And what I've seen is that price point, ironically, doesn't necessarily tie into durability. What I'm trying to say is that even higher price goods, I think from designer brands, don't necessarily last that long. And sometimes less expensive goods last much longer. I guess it really depends on the mandate that the company, the brand has in terms of longevity for the product, and also how much testing goes into what they're putting out there. Because we're working with innovative materials that are pretty new on the marketplace, I have no choice. We really have to test the crap out of them to make sure that they're going to stand the test of time. And especially if, you know, our whole thing that we're putting out there is that we guarantee the outerwear for 5 years, the bags for 2 years, even the knits are guaranteed. And beyond the guarantee, we also have a program called Last Beyond You, that when customers are done with the items, they can return it back for a 25% credit. We refurbish them and get them out to an organization here in Montreal that supports homeless youth, like kids living on the streets in Montreal. So the idea is, whether we're supporting them or another organization, is that items should never end up in a landfill. Like there has to be a plan that, even if the consumer is tired of the item for whatever reason, that they will have a second life. But in terms of, sorry, I kind of digressed in terms of the...
No, that's really interesting. Actually, I love that you bring up that very last point, which is, you know, the company taking responsibility for the life cycle of the product, right? That's kind of what I got from you at the end. And I think for so long, companies and corporations have relied on the consumer to be the one at the end of the day who, you know, throws it into the landfill or does who knows what with it. They really kind of wash their hands of the product once it's purchased. But I really like that you and your team are thinking about the full life cycle of this product and providing avenues for it to be used and not necessarily going right into a landfill. I think that's so interesting and great.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. It's yeah, and we are seeing more and more companies and brands going to that direction where whether they're even on their own website selling their own goods that have been used, slightly used.
Yes, like Patagonia. Yeah. Very interesting.
I think that's an incredible initiative. I mean, it's they always come up with like innovative directions. So that's it's no surprise there. But in terms of getting back to the process, it's funny because I often think we work backwards probably for most fashion brands where they come up with designs, ideas, collections for the upcoming seasons, and we kind of look at what's available out there in terms of innovative materials, scrap materials, materials that are plant-based, durable, long-lasting, made out of, you know, ocean waste or fish nets, and kind of work around that. Now that we have these materials, okay, what can we do? I mean, we have an idea of design direction. We're all nerds when it comes to design and I think it's not just because of slow fashion, but generally speaking, our team is more into low-key, minimalist, really focusing on, you know, the details. Like, let's take a traditional backpack and how can we sew seatbelts on this and use like really interesting zippers with big teeth and still make it very utilitarian, and then work with linings that are also either made from, you know, again, there we're limited. Like we use a lining that's made out of recycled water bottles, which I'm hoping that one day that can also be a material that already exists out there. That's a point that I wanted to bring up before. One of the challenges when you're using landfill materials is scalability. So you almost have to have a balance. And I'm actually very thankful that we're working and living in a time when there is that push towards making fabrics out of landfill materials, whether it's Econil or REPREVE. Some of them are more into recycling. Others are really into regenerating waste, which is the direction that we want to keep focusing on. But that is pretty neat that at least, you know, whether it's a lining or even now zippers, like YKK came out with a zipper that has recycled webbing for the teeth, which is pretty cool. So
that is cool.
Yeah. Again, it's not necessarily made from, you know, trash sitting in a landfill, but it is, I think, a step in the right direction, especially for an organization as, or a company as large as YKK. But yeah, we focus on designs that are more minimalist in terms of pure fashion items that whether you're wearing it today or in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, it'll still feel relevant. And then we really focus on the detailing, the way that the shape of the product, the way it kind of falls, if it's a jacket, like just making sure that when it's on, it has a very interesting look, streamlined, minimalist, somewhat tapered, not overly. We tend to work with big zippers, like we like using hardware that kind of stands out. Some of the hardware we actually make in Montreal, we get it laser cut from aluminum that comes from Quebec. Again, even the zippers that we're using, where we insisted that we use the zippers that are made by YKK here in North America. So it's this constant push to just get everything sourced as local as possible and then build designs around that whole thinking process that, like I said, are timeless, minimalist, but with a real focus on detail.
That's amazing. And another point that I want to point out is, you know, I mentioned durability. We've talked about that. Another facet of making sure that your fashion is a little bit less fast is a classic design, right? So maybe choosing to not go with the most trendy piece out there and thinking a little bit about whether or not something's going to last in terms of style, right? In addition to durability. So we're almost, you know, as we think about kind of wrapping up the episode, one thing that we love to talk with all of our guests about on Good Together is really how they like to incorporate eco-friendly living and sustainability in their everyday lives. So I wonder if you have any favorite tips or products that you'd like to share with our community and people. This is like one of the favorite questions that we ask our guests.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't have to be, you know, a specific product or anything. It could just be, you know, maybe some kind of trick you do every day. Like, I mean, reusable coffee mug, lots of people do that, but you know, it's always fun to ask.
That's interesting. I mean, try to consume in a way that the amount of, I guess, non-consumed stuff going out of where we live is really, really minimized. And that goes for everything, whether it's the way we eat or cycling as much as possible to wherever we can. We're based in Montreal, so we're, you know, I can still see snow on the ground. so that's not always an option, but I think it's just really living and thinking in a way that minimizes, I know it sounds really cliche, but just minimizing the impact we have on the environment around us every day. And I guess from a consumption point of view, it's really purchasing things when we really need them and buying the ones that are going to last a really long time that you could actually pass on to your kids. That to me is kind of true test. I mean, if you can purchase something and know that this thing is going to be out there for generations. And I think that's the way things were done back in the day, whenever that day was.
Certainly. Yeah.
Not so much now. We don't really think of consumption in those regards. And I guess being a parent myself and just trying to instill those same values in the generations that are around us to just have that mindset. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't really name any brands or products in particular, but I think it's...
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I love it. I love this mindset that you have every day. And I'm sure you have all sorts of really interesting ways that you reuse things around the house, right? Like just the fact that you were able to, you know, think about seatbelts going into handbags gives me an indication that you're probably pretty good with that kind of stuff around the house too.
Yeah, it's amazing when you start looking around you, seeing all the stuff that's been sitting around for years that can be reused, especially organic materials. Like one of the things I did when I left Matinat was I did my carpentry course, and don't ask me why, it was just a dream that I had for many years.
I love it.
And just looking at different wood items, like seeing how they could be transformed into something else has been, I think it's, yeah, just really, it's a mindset, you know, whether it's friends that haven't bought items in X number of years and have found a way to reinvent their wardrobe. Sometimes it's through a very simple detail, again, like being in the details, whether it's that or, you know, reinventing your own furniture or just on a larger scale, looking at what comes into your home and what actually goes out every week, every month. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And I think just having this general thought process about waste, about realizing that 99% of us can't be zero waste, but realizing that, you know, the amount of waste that we generate can be reduced, and we can also be creative about how we, you know, reuse things around the house versus throwing them into the recycling bin and wish cycling. We actually just did a really interesting podcast interview with some women who founded a recycling program in their city, and they had so many different insights about, you know, what actually gets recycled and what doesn't. So highly recommend checking that one out. But in terms of this conversation, I've had such a great time chatting with you, Inder. We would love to have our audience go check out your brand at 457 Anew. It's just a wonderful, I had a nice browse before our conversation and was really drawn to a few pieces there. And just, you know, the story behind them, right? Like being able to wear one and say, hey, this was made of cactus leaves, right? And having that conversation with friends and family is going to be fascinating. But thank you so much for taking the time today, Inder. And we just really appreciate you having you here.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on and everything that you guys do. It's great.
Awesome. Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.